the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today marks the fifth anniversary. 5 years ago today, Gene Robinson was confirmed as the first openly gay bishop of the Episcopal Church U.S. And what came out of all of that, of course, was a conflict and controversy that has threatened to tear apart the entire Anglican Communion. We're going to be talking about what happened in recent weeks at the Lambeth Conference, that is the every 10-year meeting of Anglican bishops, and we're going to be talking about what this means not only for the Episcopal Church U.S. and for the Anglican Communion, but also what it means for all Christians who are concerned about the state and integrity of the church. We're going to have a very special guest coming up in the second segment, and we'll be looking forward to that conversation in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news and in the culture, I posted an article at my website at albertmohler.com this morning entitled Aliens in Creation, A Generation of Nature Know-Nothings. I mentioned this topic just in closing yesterday because there is this major study out by the BBC that indicates that British children are becoming incredibly alienated from nature. We know the same thing's going on in the United States. Similar parallel studies have been done, demonstrating that American children are spending more and more time indoors rather than outdoors. They are becoming strangers in the natural world. And there are some weird things going on here. There are parents who are afraid to let their children have contact with nature. And there are environmentalists who don't want anyone to have contact with some nature. There are people who say kids need to stay out of the woods because they might do ecological damage. You've got a lot going on here. But a lot of it has to do with the way the kids are given the opportunity to spend time in front of the digital screen, playing computer games or surfing the net or doing whatever they're doing, updating their Facebook pages, rather than going outside and playing. And you also have increasing amounts of entertainment time, cultural engagement time for children being spent indoors rather than outdoors. They're going to movies rather than going to parks. They are spending time doing indoor things rather than going out. There are kids, and this is amazing to me, there are kids who've never had a swimming experience in any natural body of water because they have moms who think they only need to be in water that's been cleaned and chlorinated and all the rest. There's a whole lot going on here. And I wrote the article at albertmohler.com. You can find it. It's entitled, again, Aliens in Creation, A Generation of Nature Know-Nothings. And we're going to be talking about this on an upcoming program. We're going to take it on as a part of our radio conversation here, because as summer comes to an end, I think it's really interesting to go back and kind of reflect. What did your kids do? Did they spend the summer indoors? Did they go outdoors? What does it mean that only 6 out of 10 9 to 11-year-olds in Great Britain could identify correctly a frog as a frog? There's just something wrong there. We're going to be talking about it in days to come. But you'll find the article today at albertmohler.com. And as always, I am always just glad to hear from you. I hope you'll send me feedback. Send me an email. You can write me at albertmohler.com. You can write me just by writing it mail at albertmohler.com. You can go to the website and hit the web button and just send me mail that way as well. Yesterday we talked about the death of Alexander Solzhenitsyn and what that means, especially in light of the fact that the current generation includes many who have no idea of his historic significance and furthermore have very little idea of the reality of the Soviet Union he exposed. There is an interesting article in the New York Times today indicating that Russians now do not know exactly what to do with Alexander Solzhenitsyn and his death. They mourn him. But he appears to be, to many, a relic of a bygone age. There's something very sad that is reflected about the current state of Russian culture. The New York Times reports one man who says, quote, "There is no demand for great people. I can't say why, but this fact is simply obvious to me. Famous, notable, popular, yes, but not great in the fullest sense of the word." Now, that also tells us a great deal, kind of like the fact that children are spending their time indoors rather than outdoors. It tells us something about the culture. It tells us something about the worldview that, if not articulated, that is to say, it's not always spoken by people, it is operational. It's observable. When kids are indoors rather than outdoors, when the nature is seen as an alien place rather than as God's creation to be celebrated, that tells us something. It tells us something when a culture says, we don't really want great people anymore. We're not looking for greatness anymore. I find that very sad. Very interesting article that was published in a major American periodical in the last couple of weeks raised the question of why Hollywood isn't producing any real heroes anymore. All the heroes have to be very dark. And I think that's another illustration of at least where Hollywood's worldview is. Whether that really reflects the American worldview, the worldview of the person on the street or the person watching the movie, I'm not sure. But it does tell us a great deal about Hollywood. It tells us a great deal about Russia. That in the aftermath of the death of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a man who was once celebrated, almost revered as a hero, is now seen as someone who belonged to an age that was heroic, an age that is not our own. The issue of cloning has been very much in the news. It was in the news this morning as different nations are trying to come up with protocols to come up with a legal guideline system for cloning, whether for human beings or for animals. The Guardian, that's a left-wing paper in London, has released a news story indicating that the pet cloning services are becoming quite an industry. One California woman paid $50,000 for South Korean scientists to create 5 identical copies of her beloved pit bull. That's right. This is a dog. 5 identical copies now made. $50,000. That's $10,000 per copy. The 5 clones cost this woman the $50,000 that she considers well worth it. She said at a press conference in the South Korean capital, Seoul, where the announcement was made yesterday. Very interesting. It tells us, again, a great deal about the worldview that is operational here. First of all, you have the expense of money. You're talking about someone who is so infatuated with an animal. Not with an animal species, not with animals in general, but with this one individual pit bull that she was willing to spend $50,000 to get 5 copies. It also tells us something about the state of that technology, if this is actually now possible. And it tells us that those who are warning us about human cloning being around the corner are looking at observable data to back up that claim. How long will it be before someone in some place that is not covered by any legal jurisdiction that would prevent it would offer, at some cost, copies of a child or of another living human being? Great Britain's also a fascinating place just to look at the development of the language. After all, it is from Great Britain that we got our own language. And now the government of Britain has decided that there will no longer be references to children as obese. The word is now off limits, politically incorrect. Instead, the government will refer to those who have a body mass index that exceeds 30 as very overweight. The government explained that it did not want to stigmatize these children. It did not want to affect their self-esteem. They banned the word obese because, quote, it just shuts people down. There's no point in giving parents a letter that doesn't have an impact, talking about letters from the health authorities sent after examinations in schools to parents. So instead, supposedly this is going to make a big difference, no longer using the word obese, now using the words very overweight. CNN's reporting on a new phenomenon in America, and this has to do with stay-at-home wives. Not stay-at-home moms, but these are women who've decided to exit the workplace and stay at home because they want more time as couples, but they do not intend to have children. Now, it's always interesting when a phenomenon like this makes the news. It's interesting indeed that CNN considered this newsworthy. It tells us also that there are many couples who are now deciding just not to have children. One husband said of his wife in her late 20s, when Catherine stays at home, I feel the house is more together because she has time to do things like in-depth cleaning and can be more attentive to the garden. She also has more time to find good deals at secondhand stores, garage sales, and at grocery stores. We have more energy and we are generally emotionally healthier. That's fascinating. Again, it tells us a great deal. That used to be energy that was expected to be channeled into a family that would include children. But in some cases, children are now considered to be not only faction accessories that can be done without, but impositions in an otherwise satisfying adult lifestyle. One other report from USA Today that ought to have the attention of parents, and that is that many young teenagers and tweens age 10 and up are telling their parents they're going to one movie and seeing another, and they're getting in without any trouble at all to R-rated movies. Just because you drop them off in the movie theater doesn't mean that anyone's going to stop them from seeing what you don't want them to see. That's good to know, thanks to USA Today. We'll be back to talk about the Lambeth Conference, the future of the Anglican Communion, the Episcopal Church, and all this on the fifth anniversary of the day when the Episcopal Church U.S. confirmed its first openly gay bishop. That set the stage for our conversation, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Every 10 years, the bishops of the Anglican Communion gather for what is known as the Lambeth Conference, named for the palace across the Thames River from central London, which is the traditional and historic home of the Archbishop of Canterbury, who is the leader of the Anglican movement worldwide. The Archbishop of Canterbury is now Rowan Williams, and as the bishops gathered, there was much controversy, and that had been roiling for some years. But the focus of the controversy is the issue of biblical authority. The specific exploding point here, the fuse on this bomb, is the issue of human sexuality and homosexuality, and the catalyst for all of this was what happened 5 years ago today. 5 years ago today in Minneapolis, the Episcopal Church U.S. confirmed Gene Robinson, as the first openly gay bishop of any Anglican Communion. And that set the stage for what really happened and didn't happen in London at the Lambeth Conference. What didn't happen is that all the bishops attended. Gene Robinson was there, but he was not invited to participate in the conference. There were some others who were not invited. Over 200 conservative bishops met earlier and then boycotted, more or less, the Lambeth meeting out of their frustration with the fact that pro-homosexual bishops, especially from North America, would be attending. The Archbishop of Canterbury decided before the meeting began and made the announcement that there would be no resolutions and no votes to avoid division, but rather discussion groups. And as the Lambeth Conference came to an end, it released a document. I hold that document in my hand, entitled Reflections Upon the Lambeth Conference 2008. And it calls for what is described as a season of gracious restraint. Included in this are three moratoria. The first moratorium, most significantly, is a moratorium on episcopal ordinations of partnered homosexual people. And what you have here as especially also the election of bishops included within that. We're very glad to have today as our guest the Reverend Canon George Conger. He's an Episcopalian priest of the Diocese of Central Florida and the chief correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. Reverend Conger, can you tell us what in the world happened at the Lambeth Conference?
Well, there was about 3 weeks of talk and talk and talk, and that's all that happened. No decisions were taken, no actions were taken. Nothing authoritative or prescriptive was done at this meeting.
Now, let me ask you, as you look at this particular document, and I am holding it here in my hand, it's large and bureaucratic. It's the fourth draft. It's an interesting document just in and of itself, entitled Reflections Upon the Lambeth Conference. I want to read to you here. It says, the moratoria cover three separate but related issues: episcopal ordinations of partnered homosexual people, the blessing of same-sex unions, cross-border incursions by bishops. Goes on to say there's widespread support for the moratoria. The Archbishop of Canterbury has conceded that if the North American churches, in particular the Episcopal Church U.S., continues with these movements toward the normalization of homosexuality, that the communion is likely to break apart. Do you see the North American churches, do you see the Episcopal Church U.S. Adopting and accepting this moratorium?
No, I do not. I think one thing needs to be kept in mind. The Reflections document is designed to capture all the points of view expressed at the conference. It does not. It's not a document that speaks to what the bishops want to do. Rather, the bishops were asked at the end, do you see your voice in this document? So the moratorium is just a suggestion by some of the bishops. It has no force, it has no authority. It's just a request.
And it's a request that's very personal, isn't it? I'm looking at especially the coverage in the British press, and it looks like, at least the British press is suggesting, that it was more or less the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams himself, who said, just please do this.
Yes, because that's all there is. It's a gentleman's agreement that not everybody the bishops didn't vote on it. They were not asked to sign up to it. It's just, as it is described, a reflection of views at the conference. It has no force. It has no authority. And because of that, bishops in Los Angeles and San Francisco have already said, well, they're going to continue what they're going to continue allowing clergy to bless same-sex unions. They'll support gay clergy becoming bishops in the Episcopal Church if that should arise. They're not going to back away.
I'm looking here at an article from the Times of London that has to do with the bishop, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, D.C., John Bryson Shane, in which he condemns the conservatives as demonic and says they're going in the wrong direction, and he says that his church, his diocese, will not be going in that direction.
Yes, before the conference, Bishop Chain took great exception to attacks from African leaders, especially the Archbishop of Nigeria, Peter Akinola, for demonizing the American church, because Bishop Chain believes that God has given a special mission to the Episcopal Church to lead on this particular issue of justice for gays and lesbians in the church. And the attacks by those who hold a more traditional biblical view, Bishop Chain has dismissed as demonizing attacks upon the American exceptionalism on this issue, that America has a charge to lead the world in normalizing or removing homosexuality from the sin column, moving it to a blessing column.
It is fascinating to watch this, but as a non-Episcopalian, but as a Christian observing this, I just have to believe that this is a moratorium that doesn't really mean anything and will not restrain anyone from doing what they intend to do.
Yes, that's perfectly clear, and both you don't have to be a non-Episcopalian to see that. Before the ink was dry, those whom it was in the liberals in the United States and African bishops who support American conservatives both said that they're not going to stand back from the course they've taken.
Let me ask you to rewind. 10 years ago, in 1998, the Lambeth Conference adopted a very clear statement about the essential sinfulness of homosexuality.
Yes, that it was not that sexual relations. Yeah. As in the Christian understanding, we're confined to that between a married man and woman, husband and wife. Outside of that, including adultery, fornication, homosexuality, was contrary to God's will. And specifically, homosexuality could not be reconciled with the Scriptures as being a good or a morally positive thing. Therefore, the Church could not bless it, the Church could not support it, it could not put forward men or women who had same-sex attractions and who acted upon them as leaders of the Church.
Now, that was 10 years ago.
In 1998.
Yes, and it was voted on. In fact, I just looked that up to make sure, and so it turned out that wasn't binding either.
It wasn't binding in a legal, juridical sense. No, it's not binding. But it did speak as to the position of the communion and it had the force of moral authority. But it was not a legal document.
When we come back, I want to ask Reverend Conger another question. That is, not looking backwards 10 years, but looking forward 10 years. In 2018, what does he expect the Lambeth Conference might look like? We'll be back to talk about this crisis in the Anglican Communion and in the Episcopal Church U.S., we'll be talking about broader lessons for the larger church as well. I want to invite your calls. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What does this look like to you if you are an Episcopalian or just a Christian interested in the integrity and the future of the church? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Our guest today is the Reverend Ken and George Conger, Chief Correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. We're talking about what happened, or perhaps what didn't happen, at the Lambeth Conference, the every 10-year meeting of the Anglican bishops worldwide there in London. It closed just a few days ago. As a matter of fact, many of the bishops are still on their way back to their own homes and dioceses. It is very interesting to look at what's going on here. I'm looking at Time Magazine's coverage. And Reverend Conger, it has here a statement from the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church U.S., Catherine Jeffords Shorey. She said the Anglican Communion, quote, is suffering the birth pangs of something new, end quote. Now, I'm familiar with her. I've covered her for some time. This is a presiding bishop who clearly believes the history is moving in the direction of normalizing all homosexuality and that eventually the church is just going to have to go along.
Yes, that's how she thinks. She believes that the science, revelation is unfolding, and that the church in this day and age has a new revelation conditioned by scientific discoveries and new moral insights that allow the Episcopal Church and other denominations to affirm homosexuality as being a morally good thing.
You also have bishops who would just as clearly make absolutely transparent their opposition to homosexuality based upon the clear teachings of Scripture. So I ask you to fast forward to 2018. Let's imagine the Anglican Communion meeting together, the bishops in a Lambeth Conference of 2018. Is there going to be an Anglican Communion to be represented together at a conference like that 10 years from now?
No, and I don't think there'll be one within a year's time. Right now, the Anglican Communion is already broken. It's fractured. And the clearest sign of that is that its leaders will not sit down and receive Holy Communion together. They are unable to receive the Eucharist or the sacraments at the same service because they do not hold the same beliefs. Some believe that Jesus is a way, that there are many ways of salvation, that Christianity is their way, and that's good, but they believe that other faiths may lead to salvation, while the vast majority of bishops say that Jesus is the only way to salvation. That's just one issue, but there is a tremendous division on all sorts of issues, on Christology and moral issues and doctrinal issues and the basic words of the Nicene Creed that are not commonly shared. The communion is already broken, and this meeting did nothing to fix that. And in fact, it just solidified the positions of the two sides.
Where do you see this leaving the Episcopal Church U.S.?
I see it in the law courts over the next 10 years, frankly, as large as evangelical parishes or Anglo-Catholic parishes, who are the traditionally minded members of the Episcopal Church, either pull out and join new denominations or take shelter and refuge under the leadership of bishops from overseas churches. And this is going to spark litigation is over property and who gets to call themselves an Episcopalian, who is an Anglican. It's a mess, and there's no short-term solution that I see to fix this problem, save for one side giving up and going away.
Now, you are affiliated and a priest of the Diocese of Central Florida. That's known as one of the more conservative of the regions of the Episcopal Church. I would compare that perhaps to San Francisco or Washington or Los Angeles. In what sense are you really part of one church at this point?
We're not part of one church in the sense that I could not function. A priest from, say, San Francisco, who was a gay man or had been divorced and remarried, for example, could not come to where I am near Orlando and function as an Episcopal priest. I could not get a job or a license because of my theological views in many parts of the Episcopal Church. There's no interchangeability of clergy. It's become balkanized along doctrinal and theological views.
Our guest today has been the Reverend Canon George Conger, Episcopalian priest in the Diocese of Central Florida and chief correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. Reverend Conger, thank you so much for joining us. It's really been invaluable to have you as a guest today.
Thank you.
We'll be back with your conversation about not only what this means for the Episcopal Church U.S., but what it might mean for your church, what it might mean for the church, thinking of the broader lessons of what is happening in the Anglican Communion for all of us. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Folks, if you were listening carefully, you heard some bombs go off in that conversation. Reverend Conger spoke very candidly, more candidly than anyone I've yet heard on this subject. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Every once in a while, you talk to someone who gives you more than you expect in terms of a response. Let me tell you, there were explosive statements in that last segment. My guest was the Reverend Canon George Conger, Episcopalian priest of the Diocese of Central Florida, and he's also chief correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. Let me tell you the two things he said that I have not heard anyone yet say with that kind of knowledge of the Anglican Communion. I asked him to look forward in 10 years and ask if there could be an Anglican Communion meeting of bishops like the Lambeth Conference, and he said, no, not only not 10 years from now, not next year. In other words, it's already broken, it's gone. And there was a very honest assessment of the fact that he went issue by issue just talking about the fact that there is no real communion there other than the title. The communion itself is now broken. And then I ask him the question about the Episcopal Church U.S. I ask about his diocese, which is very conservative, and then some of the more liberal, very liberal regions of the church, such as Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. I ask if they're part of one church, and his honest one-word answer was no. And let me tell you why that is so significant. It's because a part of the Anglican ethos is the principle or ideal of what is called comprehensiveness. The fact that the church is large enough, broad enough to include just about everyone. Now, I have to tell you, as an evangelical and as a Baptist, I find that kind of claim absolutely incompatible with Scripture. I don't find Scripture suggesting that the church should be so broad as to include people who teach heresy. To the contrary, I think the New Testament is very clear about the church's responsibility to maintain the faith once for all delivered to the saints. But if you do have an ideal like comprehensiveness, you've got to try to keep as much embraced within your communion as is possible. And you're always negotiating the limits of that comprehensiveness. It tells us a great deal. And here again, extremely candid words from Reverend Conger when he said, we're not that comprehensive. There is no way you can have bishops who believe that homosexuality is a sin sitting with bishops who are homosexual and insist that it is not. Now, what was behind all of this, of course, are two big issues. The two big issues that continue to frame every significant debate faced by every church or denomination, and that is the issue of biblical authority and the issue of the gospel. The issue of biblical authority, well, Reverend Conger brought that right up. I mentioned the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church U.S., Catherine Jeffords Shorey, and her statement what you really see right now is what she calls the birth pangs of something new. She clearly believes that Scripture is going to have to give way to her own contemporary insights. In other words, the Bible's authority is simply as a point of reference of some historical past, not binding upon the church in the present. In a recent interview I just read with Gene Robinson, the first and at this point the only openly homosexual bishop of the Episcopal Church U.S., he made a very similar statement. He had to get over the idea that the words of Scripture were fixed and determinate and authoritative in that sense. When you have bishops who are pressing in that direction, there's no doubt that this principle of comprehensiveness is going to be stretched to the breaking point. It's just been true that there are very few who have been honest enough to admit that that point has already been reached. I guess this meeting in London of the Lambeth Conference of the Anglican Communion and its bishops made that clear by the fact that they were afraid even to take a vote. They couldn't take a vote because if they did take a vote, it would tear the entire communion apart. So they attempted to avoid tearing it apart by not having a vote, instead having this document of reflections. And I love the way, I had not seen this until I heard Reverend Conger use these words. He said, and get this, I can just picture myself in the room hearing this, and I'm just very aware, self-aware, that I could not have kept from laughing. When the bishops were asked, can you find yourself in this document? I mean, that is the most awkward way I think I've ever heard of asking people if they would agree to something. Can you find yourself in this document? When the document was written so that everyone could find himself in it or herself in it. In other words, it reflects every conceivable position. So it's inconceivable that anyone could not find himself or herself in that document. I've never even heard it put that way before. When you start thinking about it, it really tells you where this church is. Now, I said there are broader lessons here, because certainly there are lessons for the Episcopal Church U.S. and for evangelicals within that church, conservatives who are committed to biblical authority and the integrity of the gospel. And let me remind you why the integrity of the gospel is at stake here. It's because the gospel has to do with the salvation from sin. And if you are unclear about what sin is, you are necessarily unclear about what the gospel is. The book of Romans makes this very clear. The Apostle Paul speaks candidly about sin, and of course that's why you have, not only in Romans 1, but also in 1 Corinthians, a list of illustrative sins, not exhaustive, but illustrative sins, to remind us that we have to know what sin is in order to know what is accomplished as Christ died as the substitute, our substitute, bearing the penalty for our sins. If we don't know what that sin is, we can't possibly understand the work of Christ. We can't understand the person of Christ. We can't understand the gospel. You start looking at this and you realize that every single church and denomination in its own way, in its own timing, is facing the same issues. The biblical authority issue and the gospel issue. It's right straight in front of all of us. Whether you're the Southern Baptist Convention or the United Methodist Church, the Disciples of Christ, the Presbyterian Church USA, the Episcopal Church US, you name it. Every single church is facing this issue. And the great division is within some of these denominations. That's been the case for the last 20 or 30 years, that within these larger denominations, there have been more conservative constituencies and churches and more liberal churches, and they've been moving apart. What you see now in the Anglican Communion and the Episcopal Church U.S. is that these churches move so far apart that they are forced now to admit structurally, legally, demonstrably, that they are not part of one communion any longer. And my argument is going to be that if the denomination does not take a clear stand for biblical authority, and it's clear that the Episcopal Church U.S. is not going to do that unless something inconceivable and unforeseen happens, if it refuses to do that, then it will openly embrace what the Bible clearly teaches as sin. It will be unclear, to say the very least, if not openly heretical about the gospel, and it can give nothing more than lip service to biblical authority. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Place for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program. I want to remind you the release of my new book, Atheism Remix, is this week. It's out. It should be available in your local bookstores and on online sources as well. And to get the book, all you have to do is go to my website at albertmueller.com, and you'll see the cover of the book there in the left-hand section of the homepage, and you can place your order for the book right there. It is a Christian response to the new atheism. And when you are looking at contemporary currents of thought, certainly developments that ought to have the attention of intelligent Christians, the rise of the new atheism, people like Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, this ought to have the attention of Intelligent Christians. And I'd love to hear back from you, as always, not only about that book and my other book published earlier this year, Culture Shift, but what's written on the website, my articles and essays, and what's said on this program. I'd love to hear from you. One of the things we want to foster over the next several months is increased reader feedback and participation, also from not only readers but listeners. We'd love to hear from you. And in particular, it is a conversation that we want to foster. We want to serve as a catalyst for conversation around your dinner table, in your local church, in your family, your workplace. And as always, you can always just write us by going to albertmohler.com, hit the mail button, or write me from your own mail server at mail@albertmohler.com. You know, when you start looking at what happens, even in these summer months, and the summer, just in terms of reputation, is supposed to be a time of quieter weeks, of lower intensity, of perhaps fewer developments, fewer issues. It doesn't turn out that way. Not when the major denominations all meet during the summer. Not when you have a major presidential election really heating up and heading into the party conventions. Not when so much is going on, not only on the national and international level, but, of course, locally. One of the things right now firing up in many communities are issues related to the opening of the new school year. I received news stories just this afternoon from Arizona, Alabama, and other states about controversies related to developments just with the opening of schools. It's just a reminder that we live in a highly politicized, highly controversial time. It has to be that way. It's necessarily that way because we're living in a time in which worldviews are in conflict. There is the collision of very different ideologies, very different ways of understanding the world. And if you don't understand that, then you probably can't understand your neighbors. We're going to be talking about why that matters day by day. And tomorrow you get to set the agenda, of course. It's Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mohler program. You decide what we talk about. We'll be glad to answer your question or deal with the issue you raise. Just give us a call. Get ahead in line by getting the number firmly before you. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can get ready with your call tomorrow or write me at albertmohler.com. We'll be glad to get your question by email as well. Thanks for joining us today. I'll meet you tomorrow. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.